When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition Comic Book Podcast, where we discuss the famous, infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, is Brian Reese.
Hello, Paul Matthew Carr. What's happening?
Not much. It's summertime.
It is.
And the living is easy.
Indeed. It's quite lovely here in Chicago. I don't know about...
Denver metro area is also just absolutely fantastic. Anywho, today on the program, we'll be discussing Elephant Men, the really interesting series that I think will have some good conversations come from it. But before we get into that, two television programs have launched this week, as of the time of this recording, of course. By the time anyone listens to this, I bet the series will be over, both of them. but as for this moment in time, two series have launched, one of which is Sweet Tooth, which dropped on Netflix. I have not seen that, but Brian has. We're going to get into that in a second. And of course, Loki aired its first episode on Disney Plus. But let's start with Sweet Tooth. Now, I have not seen this. And the reason I didn't start watching it was because the comic itself is so relentlessly depressing. I just didn't want to get into that kind of a live action series. But apparently, it's a little bit different. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's so having read the comic, actually, I feel like we're always saying this, but having read the comic as it came out in the floppies and whatever, and not having really revisited it, I have to turn in my English degree. So I was a little concerned as well. I was like, my God, that was, you know, my memory of it was like, it's just a really dark series. And the Netflix series is kind of great. And yeah, I entered it with the same trepidation. I'll give it a shot because I love the comic and I really like the writer, as anybody who listens to the show probably already knows. But I think what they did with it, there are some flaws here and there, and I'm not a film or television critic, so I'm not gonna necessarily go into that in any in-depth, but there's still like darkness, there's still like sad bits, and there's, you know, we're still talking a post-apocalyptic kind of world, or not post-apocalyptic, post-pandemic. Isn't that interesting that the that might be a theme today, but
exactly.
The show has a bit more of a fairy tale feel to it. There is some lightness that shines through the darkness, as it were, to get all cliched. And it is considerably more hopeful feeling than the comic. And that's not to disparage the comic. Comic is great.
Yeah, but, and let me say, I think the comic is fantastic. It is, it's dark, it gets darker, and then fades to black completely. It's a very dark comic. And again, it's excellent, but it's not uplifting in any way.
But I think the show does a really good job of, while keeping some of those elements which you need, those are important to the plot and what happens. And if one hasn't read Sweet Tooth, I almost recommended it a little ways back, but I felt like we had already done like a bunch of Jeff Lemire. I didn't want to over Lemire things. So I didn't. It's very pretty. Cinematography on it is stunning, and I normally don't fall into the trap of this should be nominated for, because everybody thinks that the things they like should be nominated for awards, and most of what we like probably shouldn't be nominated for awards. Probably. But this is one of those few instances where I will actually say that the cinematography on it I think is quite exceptional. But that said, the cinematography is one thing, but it's very well done. There's some weird quibbles I have. They just don't really matter, because the overall enjoyment of the show is I highly recommend it. And prepare to have some sads, but also prepare to kind of enjoy some magical realism. It's not really magical realism, but it has that feel. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about children who take on animal characteristics, so right. Yeah, so there's magical realism.
But at the end of the day, it's a road trip. And I, you know, two of my favorite genres are road trips and heist movies. And so, you know.
Yeah, sprinkle a little fantasy on top of that. And
a little stardust.
Good to go. Well, good. I am going to get to it. Like I said, I was just starting to feel the happiness of summer, and I just didn't want to weigh it down with Sweet Tooth right now.
Right.
But knowing that it's a different take on the source material, give it a shot. Now, the second series, as of the time we're recording right now, the first episode of Loki has been released. It's quite good. Again, I guess spoilers, but again, this will, by the time this comes out, you'll have seen the whole thing. It's fine. I don't know about you, Brian. I think it's really good.
It's hard to judge, you know, after one episode. There are ideas in this show that I think are really, really intriguing. I love the whole, what is it, the time variant agency?
Yeah, the TVA.
The TVA. I mean, that's hilarious. And have Owen Wilson.
Wow.
Right. I mean, you know, when you think of Owen Wilson, you think of like the same character over and over.
Yeah, Party Crashers.
One doesn't expect depth from Owen Wilson.
But he's charming as hell.
I think you get it a little bit here. I think it's Owen Wilson not playing Owen Wilson playing a wedding crasher or whatever it is that he... It's pretty fun. There's something weird about the directing that threw me off a little bit, though.
Really?
It's kind of like, I feel like it distracted me. And I don't really look at, like, if I'm watching a superhero film, I don't necessarily put the same sort of qualifications as to scene set and what have you that I might for like a Werner Herzog film, right? You know, I mean, these are different things.
Okay, Mr. Scorsese.
Right. I mean, but there was something oddly distracting about.
Really,
the direction that it kind of stuck with me a little bit, and I'm trying to think how to describe it. It's particularly when people were standing around and they were kind of just standing around in like a line. I don't know. I mean, I realize this is a weird critique. It has nothing to do with the theme of the show. It has nothing to do with the great performances. Tom Hiddleston
is great. Amazing.
Yeah. Has nothing to do with the concepts. There was just some clunkiness in the directing that I just distracted me a little bit. It may not make sense, but it was weird that it stuck out to me where, you know, in a way that like another superhero type film or shows or films that I wouldn't have normally noticed or cared about.
I did not notice that. I was kind of taken by how much like, you know, Mad Men kind of a feel it had to it because of the old analog equipment and the mundane office situation,
right?
Which just added to the whole feel of it.
And visually, it's great.
There's just, you know, I like the fact that Marvel is feeling like it wants to expand what it can do with the genre now.
Right.
The universe is established. There's been, 10 plus years of groundwork. So now it can just break its own rules and continuity and get more creative with the stories and introduce characters that are just bizarre and concepts that are, you know, way out there. You know, really get comic booky with it. So you have Vision and Scarlet Witch, and you have... you know, and now you have this. So they're just kind of really expanding what they're going to do. And we know that, you know, Doctor Strange is going to be the multiverse of madness. So that's going to be bizarre.
Or we assume so, since that's the title.
Well, yeah. Plus what they've been setting up.
Right.
You know, what they've been setting up with Wanda and WandaVision and what they're setting up here, you know, with the timekeepers. Who knew that a comic book movie would have the damn timekeepers in it? It's fantastic. And I read up on this stuff more than you do. So I know that Kang the Conqueror is going to be the villain in the next Ant-Man and the Wasp movie.
Oh, great.
And it looks like they might be setting that up in this series. I'm not going to get too far into fan theories.
Which makes sense considering, like, you know, Kang's history.
Which is literally all of history.
He's all of history.
Yeah, which of course, and all of that can lead to the Fantastic Four, which of course we know is going to be happening eventually. So I really like how they're just expanding their whole universe into just crazy concepts. Yeah, they've been able to kind of bring the general public into their way of thinking. If you know what I mean, because there's a lot of people who don't read comics. And yet, right, over 10 years, they have been able to make the Marvel Universe so much of a part of the culture. I mean, who knew that Iron Man and Captain America would be, you know, pop culture icons?
Well, I think Captain America actually has been a pop culture icon for...
Well, you know what I mean. He was never...
years.
But, you know, in the background, no one actually read his comics. Except for me, like you and me. Thor, right. Exactly.
Thor, Iron Man, Thor, you know, Hawkeye.
Hawkeye, Black Widow.
I mean, for those have to become pop culture. Spider-Man, yes. Captain America, yes. Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, yes.
But not in the way that, yes, everyone knew who Captain America was, just the look and the shield and, you know, the concept of Captain America. But the general...
And Captain America has been a very popular, character in the punching Nazis.
The punching Nazis genre, which is one of my favorites.
Yes.
Kind of the OG punching Nazis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. But what I mean by that is that no one was really reading Captain America stories or knew... No one knew who the Winter Soldier was in the general public. No,
definitely not the Winter Soldier.
But anyway, I just like they set the groundwork. They built this, you know, they built this world, and now they're able to say, oh, and since you're into this, let's have the Timekeepers and Kang the Conqueror and the Guardians of the freaking Galaxy. You know, just to be able to introduce a talking tree and say, isn't this cool?
And then everybody loved the talking tree.
Yes, and everybody loves the talking raccoon
who had one line of dialogue,
right,
over and over and over again.
Well, he is Groot. That is true.
Apparently, I've been given to understand.
It's, unless it's all been a lie, and he actually isn't Groot.
He's a Skrull.
Well, that's, you know, Secret Invasion.
That's coming too, right?
Yeah, Secret Invasion is going to be coming. So who's a Skrull and who's not a Skrull? So I am really excited for the weirdness.
If they make Groot a Skrull, I think that's just going to blow minds, though.
But no, I am really excited for the weirdness to come. Because, you know, because She-Hulk is coming and Moon Knight is coming. And what else are they going to do? Oh, What If?
Yeah.
The first series is coming.
I'm very curious about What If. I have a great fondness for the What If, the first run What If comics.
Yeah, me too.
A lot of them were depressing as hell, though, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess so.
They all ended with people dying, you know.
And that's What If actually was the first comic to introduce Jane Foster as Thor long before the 2000s, which is going to be Love and Thunder. Yeah. So I just, that's more of what I take from Loki. When I watched it, I was just like, I am so excited that just weird comic book stuff and the weird cosmic time travel stuff that I love. Look at this.
Time travel drives me crazy. So,
you know, as a Whovian, time travel is amazing.
But you know, it seems like Loki is going to be dealing with it in an incredibly fun fashion. So,
well, he's DB Cooper.
He is that's one of the best parts, right?
Yeah,
DB Cooper. And for the longest time, I just assumed it was going to be Don Draper. I always assumed Don Draper was going to be DB Cooper.
Nope, turns out it's Loki, and it makes perfect sense.
It does make perfect sense.
So anyway, I really like Loki. The first episode, at least, it exceeded my expectations. And all I can say is, wow.
It kind of took me back to, like, I like the Falcon and Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. But after WandaVision, it was kind of a letdown. I mean, they're not supposed to be the same show. I'm not trying to say Falcon and Winter Soldier had to have the same thing that WandaVision had, but WandaVision was just so interesting. And then I felt like Falcon and Winter Soldier, which was vastly entertaining, completely enjoyed it, but I just didn't feel like it had the same pop that WandaVision had. And I feel like with Loki now, we're getting that pop back a little bit in a completely different way. I'm not saying, you know, oh, it's just the same weird as WandaVision. It's not.
No. To be fair, Falcon and Winter Soldier was because of pandemic weirdness. It was supposed to be released first and then WandaVision because of COVID and have things, schedules being shifted around and so forth. they had to swap those two. So I just think, had we seen Falcon and the Winter Soldier first, we would have been like, oh, this is a great show.
Right. Yeah. I still think it's a very good show. I don't want to diminish it because I very much enjoyed it.
And again, it's setting, I kind of like the fact that they're keeping that grounded world. And right. I assume that's what the Hawkeye series is going to be.
Yeah, Hawkeye will probably be kind of more, yeah.
Yeah, and Moon Knight will probably be the same way, just more grounded.
Yeah, no, I think Moon Knight probably is, we don't know what Moon Knight's going to be, but you know, Moon Knight's wacky.
It depends on what version of Moon Knight they go with.
Right. I mean, you know, Moon Knight's got, you know, Egyptian gods and, you know.
Yeah, believe me, if they go that direction, I'm on board. I just thought they were, I just have a feeling they're going to be more of the Batman-esque version.
Right. Yeah. Although he was the second Marvel Batman after Daredevil.
Yeah. And then Nighthawk? Nightwing?
Nighthawk.
Not right. Nightwing, Nighthawk. But, you know, I'm very excited to see what they're going to do because so far they're just telling really good stories.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm on board with that.
That said, just as an aside, there's a new Moon Knight series coming.
Okay.
And is this like the 20th or 25th reboot of Moon Knight over the past 15, 20 years?
I don't know. But if you want a complete answer to that, you should listen to the podcast Into the Night. It's a very fine podcast on Moon Knight.
Ah.
So there's a recommendation for you.
Okay.
Maybe I'll play their trailer when we go to break, which
you
I think
should
we
do that.
Yeah, I think I will. Do you have anything more to say about these shows?
I don't. Maybe we should go to break so we can hear that trailer for the Moon Knight podcast.
Let's do it.
All right.
Back in a bit, everybody.
Hi, I'm one of the High Priests of Khonshu, Rey, and I have the sacred privilege of providing you, the Loony Listener, with a podcast honoring Marvel's very own Moon Knight. Want to learn more about the Fist of Khonshu in comics? You got it. We review all current and classic runs from Mensch to Houston to Lemire. Want to know where else to find the Avatar of Vengeance? Glad you asked. We also review action figures, video games, animation, TV, anything and anywhere Moon Knight is featured, we've got it covered. All this along with any latest news which may feature our White Knight, week in or week out. So join me and a host of others at Into the Night, a Moon Knight podcast. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, or support the show by becoming a Patreon member. Into the Night, a Moon Knight podcast. It's time to get your Khonshu on.
And we're back. Brian.
Paul.
This week, we'll be discussing your recommendation. Tell us all about it.
Okay, I will. Elephant Men is a complex and far-ranging series written by Richard Starkings and featuring art by Moritat and a revolving stable of other well-known artists. The story follows a world some 200 years in the future that has been devastated by a global pandemic referred to as the HCN virus. From the ashes of this plague, a war breaks out in Africa and Europe and leads to the rise of the Mappo Corporation, helmed by the nefarious Dr. Kazushi Niken. Mappo creates a human-animal hybrid army of soldiers, or transgenics, known for our purposes as elephant men. These creatures, bred and born under horrific circumstances both ethically and physically, are raised as unthinking killing machines with no moral compass or human emotion to prevent them from enacting mass destruction and horrific acts of war. Europe is laid to waste. Many years into the future, these elephant men have been liberated, as it were, and are allegedly freed from the morally compromised condition they, as soldiers, had existed in. Through sketchy science and social conditioning, these soldiers are reintroduced into society in various capacities, with a highly skeptical populace looking on with a sense of trepidation, fear, and outright hostility. With a strong nod to Blade Runner and other neo-noirish sci-fi predecessors, we leap into the first trade of Elephant Men, Wounded Animals, which collects the first seven issues of the series proper. This collection serves as a bit of table setting where we are introduced to a host of characters, most notably our two main protagonists, Hieronymus Hip Flask, a hippo transgen, and Ebenezer Ebony Hyde, an elephant transgen. These issues leap wildly through the timeline, presenting a dizzying amount of information that can be confusing and slightly disorienting. But they serve a broader purpose, and Starkings' level of world building is impressive, if a bit frustrating. We're given scraps when we want a coherent whole. This is one of the rare books that do actually read better in a long trade dive. But within these issues, we see the fruition of an idea and an epic story. A story that raises a host of questions. What is human? What is a soul? What are the ethics of cloning and experimentation? What is sexuality? And of course, the overriding discussion of the other, which has plagued mankind in all of its xenophobia and racism. There are heavy ideas going on in this series, but also, this is a noir detective comic, and that's pretty cool too. Okay, so Paul, did reading these first seven issues, did it make you angry? Did it make you confused? Did it make you irritable? Did it make you happy? What are your initial thoughts? Because this is tricky reading because Starking is all over the place.
It is. This is more, like you said in your introduction, this is really world building. This is trying to get you introduced to the characters, get you introduced to the world, and ask a boatload of questions that will not get answered, at least in this particular collection.
None of these questions get answered. Spoiler alert, a lot of these questions are answered or addressed later on, but...
Yes, and I was not frustrated or angry. Now, I know we'll get into it. I think you were. I was more just intrigued into, like, what is this? Where is this going? Because there's a lot of heavy issues, or a lot of questions, a lot of issues, a lot of concepts that are brought up that are really heavy, and some of them just deeply disturbing.
So I do want to say, like, right off the bat, like, I've read the entire thing, and I read them in their original issues and then reread them in all of them in trade.
Just so you know, I finished this and then went on to the second trade, and I've currently just started the third. So it was intriguing enough that I said, where is this going? I want to find out. So I kept going, which I shouldn't be doing for this program. I should only be focusing on the film. But
I think it's
as I want to do. I never do that. I keep going.
Well, I think it's hard. I think there is a lot of really, so I'm not, I wasn't irritated reading this because I knew where they were going, but I was trying to reread this as someone reading it for the first time. And I was reading it going, man, this is going to drive some people crazy.
Well, if you take it, I mean, I came at it with the mindset of these are little vignettes, because the issues are actually split into two separate stories.
Yes.
Like a main and a
backup. A lot of the issues are like two separate stories.
Yeah. So I figured, I came into it like, these are vignettes. I'm not going to be given answers. Just let it, just absorb what I can. And, you know, just trust that it will be told to me later. And it does. It gives you little bits and pieces here and there with whether it's just a small flashback or even just flashes in the character's memory. So it does tell you what's going on, but it's not spoon feeding it to you, which can be frustrating. But at the same time, I kind of appreciate that storytelling technique.
Well, and I think it's important to note that the timeline jumps all over the place.
Yeah.
Now, one of the nice things Starkings does is he tells us when it is and he gives us the year.
Yeah, which is nice. Yeah.
But, you know, because this is in the future, you know, I remember 2259 versus 2241? Well, it's not the same for me as, like, if it's at 1972, 1986, 1993, which are dates that I can pinpoint in my memory.
Right. Yeah, there were a few times where I had to flip back and go, like, wait, where am I? Okay. So, but, you know, you get into, as you start to read, you get into the flow, and you just kind of, you know, as long as you allow the characters, you know, get involved with the characters, you know, because Ebony and Hip Flask are cool, rich you know, multi-layered characters, even though they're an elephant and a hippo. But
it should be, and it should be noted, of course, for those who haven't read this, they are hybrids. They are, you know, a mix of human and animal. So they possess human characteristics in language, and, you know, they walk on two legs, not on four.
And they have, yeah, two legs good, four legs bad. And they have hands.
Right. And some of the other transgenics are, you know, there were zebras and giraffes and hyenas. We haven't experienced the hyenas yet, I don't think.
No. And there are lions and tigers and bears.
Crocodiles. There aren't, at least at this point, there are no lions, tigers, or bears.
Not in this collection, but there are
tigers. These are primarily animals native to Africa, because this is where Mappo, the evil corporation that created these, is from. And it's hard, too, because there is a war referenced, and I had you read War Toys, the three-issue War Toys, which gives kind of, we're not going to discuss it here because it's not part of the trade, but that gives some of the sense of this weird war that happened that is not really clearly defined in this trade that involved Africa and Europe.
I do want to say that there is one thing in the, we're not going to discuss War Toys, but there's one bit in one of the issues where, because there's a global pandemic and one of the characters is wearing a mask, but it's over his chin. And I was so pissed off. Wear your mask. God damn it. Yeah. Oh, how the world has changed.
There's a lot about this comic that's kind of the fact that it was a global pandemic that wiped out a massive portion of the world. You know, it's referenced that there were only like a few thousand people left in Europe. Yeah. And that's before the animal men came in wiped everybody else out.
I don't know. It's the genius of this story, because we're talking about animal hybrid soldiers, but it's also a neo-noir detective story.
Right.
Which is really fascinating and brilliant. And just to see an elephant in a fedora.
Come yeah. on. and the way this is set up is like in the present day, meaning 2259, I think, is the present day in this comic. Ebony and Hip Flask they're cops. You know, they have been, they're in Los Angeles. They're Los Angeles cops. They're part of the transhuman division, you know, and their job is to solve crimes, and mostly crimes involving other transgenics.
Because you need the muscle to.
Right.
Because they're very strong and very dangerous.
But they're basically both different variations of Sam Spade and Rick Deckard.
Pretty much. Yeah. The parallels to Blade Runner and Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep are, I assume that they're intentional. I didn't read it. Yeah, okay. I assume so. I didn't look into it, research that, but it was so obvious that I just assumed it was.
Although, yeah, and the way Los Angeles is set up has the very Blade Runner-ish vibe. Yeah,
lots of neon, lots of rain. You know, and again, some of the issues brought up here, you mentioned a whole laundry list of things, but you know, there's also interracial marriage and slavery and PTSD. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of issues that are brought up in these comics.
Yeah, Starkings is usually, this isn't heavy-handed. This is a comic book,
right?
And it is a comic book meant to entertain. It's a sci-fi, like we said, sci-fi noirish comic book. But Starkings is definitely using some of this. There are really strong questions about society and you know, I mean, in the same way that the mutants, like the X-Men, were used as sort of parallels to racism and homophobia, the Elephant Men are definitely a representative of certainly racism.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, just the way that the humans interact with them and their fear and don't go near them, that sort of thing.
And sort of the concept of breeding and the sort of nature that they are like animals from, they are from Africa. I mean, this is jabbing sort of white nationalist ideas and mores Starkings is definitely making a point.
Oh, absolutely. Before we go into the story itself, I do want to say that there is one belief that I hold that has actually been reinforced by this comic. And that is Howard Stern was just the worst.
Yep.
There is an issue where a Howard Stern-esque radio program is going on.
It's really disturbing.
Yes. It's disturbing on many, many levels, not the least of which is that Howard Stern's humor just sucks.
Yes.
But anyway, tell us about the story, Brian.
Well, there's a lot of story. The very basics of the story are what we get in these seven issues. It's divided up into several pieces, but again, there are a lot of flashbacks. But essentially, we see Hip Flask and Ebony in society and interacting within society in the way that they can. Now, certain storylines we are beginning to get introduced. So Ebony is, the elephant is introduced to a young girl, Savannah.
The elephant in the room.
The elephant in the room, yes, who is fascinated by him. Now, her mom is not particularly keen on this, but, you know, he's just standing out in the street and she comes across the street because her mom's working across the street, whatever. You know, and she asks him a bunch of questions and she's a kid, you know, and your first reaction is like it's a little some fear because you're like, is this going to be a Frankenstein situation? And of course, it's not remotely. It's like, you know, she befriends Ebony, whether he likes it or not. She's going to be his friend.
Yeah. So, to her, it's just this big, it's a big animal. And
yeah,
isn't he cute and so forth?
And he talks and, you know, and then she talks to him and he talks back to her. And then, you know, he interacts with her in a positive way.
Yeah. He puts his nose in his mouth. Ta-da. Which is adorable. Yeah.
He treats her with kindness and something she doesn't experience at home. And so she, you know, so they become friends. So that's kind of, and that pays off down the line. And then with Hip Flask, the hippo, who is actually kind of the primary protagonist of the series. He is befriended by Mickey, a cab driver who possibly she's an adult and might have some interest in him other than just as friends. So yeah. part of the story is introducing or showing the Elephant Man interacting with humans and in a positive light. Some of the sub stories that are going on are we have this guy Serengeti. We don't know who he is yet. It's hinted at that he was involved in the creation of the Elephant Men, but we don't get his full story or exactly what he means to the Elephant Men or another character in this story. I don't know if you've gotten there yet in your reading, but
Think we should just focus on what we got right here.
Yeah. So Serengeti is this character Serengeti is introduced, and he is a human who has a broad interest in the Elephant Men and killing them.
Yeah, he's an asshole.
Also introduced to Obadiah Horn.
By the way, great names.
Well, it's they refer to it, and it's in the Howard Stern issue where he talks about how all of the characters. So Ebony Hyde is actually Ebenezer, and Hip Flask is Hieronymus, and the Howard Stern character actually brings up the fact that all of the animal men, of which there are thousands of them introduced into society, all have like biblical names. So Obadiah Horn, the rhinoceros, who has become a multi-millionaire businessman.
Yeah, he's a kingpin.
He is the kingpin of the story. He's very kingpin. I mean, yes. He's the same size as Kingpin.
Yep, wears similar suits, and yeah, he's kingpin.
Has the same temperament, and his fiance Sahara's human, and she has a history with some of the other Elephant Men as well. And she is a peacekeeper. Obadiah Horn is a criminal. I don't know if that.
Yes, but he's sort of, he's kind of like a mafia boss where, yes, he's a criminal, but he also is public facing and, you know, he's seen as a celebrity.
As far as the story goes, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and then that's a little subplot of, you know, it's basically interracial marriage. Are they allowed to get married?
Right.
Yeah. So society frowns upon it.
And that's a whole point later on in the story. The problem is that there's not a single story that I could just say A happens followed by B followed by C, you know, and then Superman saves the day.
Yeah, in the end, these are all just character studies so that we get to know through the characters what the history and what the world is.
Right. And there is the only really through plot line is the statue. Both Ebony and Hip Flask end up in the hospital. Ebony because he was ambushed by Serengeti apparently what we're given to understand is that a collector of some sort hired Serengeti to... The collector didn't want just an elephant man's head on his wall. He wanted the full elephant man dead and stuffed. So there's a big fight scene that Ebony ends up winning out after going full on rage and reverting to the soldier he was when he was an elephant man in Africa, just killing randomly. So he gets injured and ends up in the hospital. And then Hip Flask has this weird fight with his crocodile, and it seems to not really have much to do with anything. It's beautifully illustrated, but you're kind of like, what are they fighting for? And you realize that Ebony is fighting for this statue. And he ends up winning this fight as well, but is severely wounded, and he procures this statue. And you're like, you know, what is this about? It didn't seem to really have anything to do. But a lot of these things don't really seem to have anything to do with the other until you keep reading.
Right. But we've been trained as comic book readers to say, okay, this seed has been planted. It will grow fruit later. Just understand that MacGuffins have been planted.
And it's... So with Hip Flask, it's when he's wounded and laying bleeding with a statue that Mickey, the cab driver, she finds him and, you know, calls for help and whatever. And she finds the statue that he's holding, and she kind of holds on to it for him. And she's the one that gets him to the hospital. She also does a little trouser peek. And
I don't know. It's understandable, but strange at the same time.
So the through lines are that at various points, both Ebony and Hip Flask are hospitalized. And then whilst they're in the hospital, some other sort of plot points come together while they are there. That leads to some flashbacks.
Some very disturbing flashbacks.
Yeah. So it should be noted, a lot of the flashbacks back to the war show the Elephant Men in their full sort of amoral, they were created just to be unthinking soldiers that just, you said, you pointed them, you know, they were guns, and you just pointed them and said kill, and they did so without question.
Yes, and it didn't matter, men, women, children, doesn't matter if they're old or young, or even on their side for that matter.
Right.
They just,
and they were created to not have any compulsion about it. You know, they didn't ask questions. They didn't think about what they were doing. They just did what they were told to do. And so you get these flashbacks throughout the series that then contrasts with the numerous elephant men that we are introduced to in these issues, who are acting like as humans in many ways and socialized humans. Even if they're barely socialized, like the crocodile animal man that Hip Flask was fighting for the statue, you know, is still like he's more humanized than he would have been, but still retains that ferocity.
Right. He's the one who shows up on the Howard Stern type program. Yeah. Which ends in a disturbing way, where you think he's going to attack, but he's...
Well, the Howard Stern,
yeah,
right. It's so that issue is there's a Howard Stern character. I forgot to write down his name. I can't remember. It doesn't really matter. It's Howard Stern.
It's Howard Stern. Yeah.
And so he brings on this crocodile, elephant man, crocodile, and proceeds to provoke him in every way, shape, and form possible to try to get him to break. To the point where Howard, you know, they bring out these scantily clad women, and, you know, a lot of sexual suggestions are made. And also, you know, do you want to attack these women sexually, or do you want to eat them? You know, he asks him at one point, have you ever tasted human flesh? You know, and this crocodile elephant man, he shows up in a suit, you know, and he's trying to present himself in the most human way possible. And the Howard Stern character just pokes and pokes and pokes and pokes until the crocodile elephant man loses it and attacks one of the women. And of course, you're like, oh, shit. And then you go to the next page, and he is standing over the woman, and she's passed out, and he's got her breast covered up. You know, he hasn't attacked her.
Well, he's showing
that he could have.
He feigned the attack in order to shock everybody.
And then his final line is, human flesh, it tastes like chicken.
Yeah. And this is one of the things where it's out of the timeline is out of order. So because you get this story first, and you actually have sympathy for this crocodile man. Mm-hmm. But he's actually the one who has the fight with Hitlask later in the comic. Well, which is actually earlier in the comic.
It's early in the comic, which means later in the...
So, you know, all right, so you have sympathy for him, but you know that, oh, well, he's one of the bad guys, actually. So, right. It's actually quite well done.
Yeah, but he's not necessarily, like, we don't know that he's a bad guy. He had this statue that Hip Flask was trying to get from him, but it's, you know, it's never presented as, how did this crocodile elephant man have the statue? Did he find the statue and then Hip Flask just went to take it away from him and the guy, and he was like, no, it's mine.
Yes, but we know that he's involved with Horn, who is a criminal. And Hip Flask is the good guy. He's the protagonist that we're going to be following. So we're obviously going to have sympathy for her. Plus he's a hippo. Because he's so cute.
So there are numerous other sub-stories and various characters. So are introduced very briefly. We have Vanity Case is introduced in like two panels. She becomes important later.
I like Vanity Case.
Vanity Case. Grunewald.
Yes, I wonder who that could be. That's obvious.
The detectives. Joe, Kasbah Joe, who is a camel.
Yeah, that's obviously Joe Camel, yeah.
Joe Camel makes a couple appearances. Again, these are introductions. And we're getting a little bit of their story. Like with Kasbah Joe, he saves Serengeti back during the war, but then Serengeti shows up and starts blackmailing Kasbah Joe. If that sounds like I'm giving short shrift to that story, that's basically the story.
Yes. Yeah. And Kasbah Joe is very much a Rick's Cafe, Casablanca type of thing. Yeah.
I mean, Starkings is playing with, clearly playing with a lot of fun archetypes from film and novels with a lot of these characters too.
Yeah, it should be noted, by the way, that this whole idea came from that crazy line that George W. Bush said during one of the State of the Unions about human-animal hybrids. I mean, just the fact that this really bizarre line from a State of the Union address yielded this story, that in and of itself is really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that line is actually quoted in the first issue. Yeah.
And Starkings does a great job. He has that one bit of story where he's just basically quoting Job. It's just one of the short stories, and it basically just shows it's the elephant men in war, and he's quoting these Bible verses from Job about the apocalypse and things like that. And you know, he just it's just several pages of like these Bible verses shown presented with like this really intense violence,
right? So that it's like some kind of a, so it's hinted at that this is a religious war, an apocalyptic war.
But religion comes in and out of the, again, because of the biblical names. There's a lot in this sandbox.
Exactly. And we know that the creator of the Elephant Men, the Mapo, I'm sorry, I forget the character's name.
Nikan, N-I-K-K, Dr. Nikan.
He considers, he has a very much a messiah complex where he considers himself the creator. And these Elephant Men are his children. And that will play in later.
A couple other interesting sort of plot points of note before we could talk about some themes and things after. We are also introduced to Tusk.
Who's a warthog.
Who's a warthog. And without saying too much, Tusk is, he is one of the elephant men who broke. The story presents, they show how these elephant men were treated before they even became the soldiers, and they were abused mightily and were having every shred of decency and every shred of that half of them that was human sort of ripped out of them. One of the short stories that introduces us to Tusk, who is a very tragic figure, shows, you know, they talk about, like, well, it's Ebony. Ebony takes Mickey to see Tusk. Tusk is locked up, right? It's Ebony and Mickey. Ebony takes Mickey for a walk in the hospital, and it's a special wing of the hospital where the elephant men are. And, you know, he's like, oh, you're fascinated by the elephant men, are you? Well, let me show you this. And he shows her Tusk. And Tusk is, in a straitjacket in like a rubber room. And Ebony gives the story about, you know, what they did to the elephant men as they were training them to be these animal soldiers. Like, some of their minds just broke. And instead of them being put to sleep or killed, they were kept as examples.
They were kept as examples by Mappo, as examples of, you know, what happens if you don't comply. But then they were kept by the UN as examples of, look how compassionate we are that we allow them to live. So, right. So they're just pawns either way. And it's really sad.
Yeah. And we will see Tusk again. But that's one of those little moments that Starkings puts in there. It's like a few, it's not maybe not even a full page worth of panels where you get like this deep history of a character and then they move on and you're like, well, that's nice. But it's something that plays out later on in the series. But it also demonstrates the deeply conflicted moral nature of the series itself.
There's, like I said, there's a lot of disturbing implications, not even implications, there's just disturbing stuff in it. Not the least of which is the surrogate mothers. So,
which are very briefly mentioned, but yes, go ahead.
Well, it's just these hybrid embryos are actually implanted in a woman. It's non-consensual, and they don't survive the procedure. Yeah, it's I read that and had to put the comic down for a bit and just say, okay, woof. That's really heavy stuff, man.
It's extremely heavy stuff, and it is dealt with, not to get ahead of ourselves, but again, this is one of those things where he throws that out there.
And it's like, very matter of fact. Yeah.
You're right. And he wasn't being matter of fact. Starkey's wasn't being matter of fact just to toss it off as like, this is revisited, and it's revisited in a very, very, very serious way later on in the comics. Again, I'm not trying to jump ahead, but I'm just pointing that out as an example of, like you said, that if that little piece of it affected you deeply, as I think he meant it to do, and he planted, again, it's like he planted that seed in you as you're reading it.
Exactly. And that is what this, you know, as frustrating as it may be that you were just getting a lot of questions in this first seven issues, well, first six issues, I should say, but so many ideas like that particular situation, which will come back, the idea of interracial marriage and racism and slavery, emotional manipulation. I mean, so many ideas are introduced here, but it is compelling. I mean, it's compelling. I mean, at least for me, I can speak for myself to say, when I got to the end of these seven issues, I said, okay, you got me. Where is this going? So it is actually incredibly well done in the way that it just doles out little tidbits of information and ideas, but it's done in such a way that it wants you to keep going. I mean, it compels you to keep going.
I mean, it's and we should note that it's done with absolutely stunning artwork.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. You know, this is something that could have been, let's face it, silly in concept, but it's done not realistic, but how would you describe it? It's just incredibly well done. The art is fantastic in this.
Yeah, it's a Moritat, really. And what's interesting about the series going forward is it's Moritat. Starkings brings in like other writers to write issues, other artists. Eventually, Moritat, I think, leaves the series, and then he brings in these incredible. It's a lot of European artist that he has working on this, which I think is very interesting as well. But throughout the series, I mean, it's just some of the artwork is just dazzling.
Even the horrific aspects are rendered in such a way that it's grotesque beauty, I guess you'd say. The art is stunning.
And speaking of the art, the first six issues are as we've kind of discussed, there are a lot of little vignettes and a lot of little introductions and a lot of little moral quandaries that we're getting hinted at but not getting answers for. Then we get the seventh issue, which was primarily written by Joe Kelly with art by Chris Bacalo.
I love it. I think this issue is great. Yeah, it's a fable.
So we get to the final issue of this collection, and it's Captain Stoneheart and the Truth Fairy. The Truth Fairy. So the framing sequence on this is that Savannah comes to the hospital wanting to see her new friend, Ebony.
She has run away from home.
She has run away from home because her mom is very abusive. And so she comes to see her friend Ebony, and she can't find him. So she ends up in Hip Flask's hospital room. And Hip Flask's like, oh, yeah, you're Ebony's friend. And she's like, I can't find him, you know. And they just start talking, and Hip Flask is like, you should go see your mom. You should go back to your mom. And she's like, no, I'm not going to see my mom. My mom hates me, and nobody tells me what to do. And, you know, it's just a typical, it's basically an adult talking to a child. It could have been, you know, you take away the fact that one of them is a half human, half hippo. It could be dialogue that exists in any book, novel, what have you. So that's the framing device. So that's the framing device. There's the end frame as well. But what that leads to is this sort of fable, fairy tale piece. So Hip Fast decides to tell her, you know, a story.
But of course, this is all a parallel to what happens. What has happened in the Elephant Men in general and Hip Flask in particular.
Right. It's basically telling the story of, you know, I mean, because at some point, you know, it's the one thing that the comic doesn't really talk about yet is how they were socialized. And it does later, but obviously, you know, they go from these mindless killing machines to now being introduced to society. At some point, they had to be socialized. And one of the figures most responsible for socializing them was Sahara, who is now Obadiah Horn's fiance. So, of course, Hip tells a story. And then the end framing device, of course, is him talking to the girl again. And she's like, nobody should have their heart broken that way. And he's like, well, no one would ever do that in real life. And then they go for a walk or whatever. And then you're left and you see a picture of Hip Flask and Sahara.
It's hinted at that there is a parallel story to come. It's all very well done. I really like this last issue. It's kind of on the nose, but at the same time, in a good way.
In a good way. It's one of the few, it's one of the few stories here where we get an answer.
Yeah, there's a beginning, middle, and end.
Oh, and the most important part about this, right? It's so that statue that Hip Flask was fighting the crocodile for. So in that picture with him and Sahara, she's holding that statue or the doll that was in the statue.
Which he then gives to
Savannah.
So
what we know now is it's one of the concluding, we actually get an answer to a few things just in that picture. And one of them is why he was battling so hard to get that statue with the doll inside it back.
And this also allows us to know that, yes, these things will be paid off. Keep reading. Right. You know, you will get answers. Just keep reading. Which led me to say, as soon as I finished this collection, said, better go get the next one.
One of the, and I hinted at this before, like in the intro and elsewhere, is even the trades are a little screwy.
I did have to look up online. You know, because what exactly Starkings, the reading order.
Yeah, because Starkings is telling the past and the present simultaneously. So when these issues are coming out, like it'd be like Wounded Animals, part one. And then the next issue would be something completely different. And then 7 months later, you get Wounded Animals, part two. where he would go back and revisit. You can't even see my hands, like, you know, moving around.
But I could hear the sadness in your voice. It came out, and then another one, and oh god.
But that's part of why it actually, I think, does read better in trade. Now, again, and I read it as it was coming out, but there were a lot of times I'd be like, I don't remember what happened 7 months ago. Right. And you know, I'd have to go back in. But so the trades will collect like a few issues of Elephant Men, and then a supplement, and then six issues of Elephant Men later on.
The trades do collect them in the way that they need to be read.
Yes.
To get a coherent story.
Beware as you're reading this, if you're trying to read the floppies, or if you're trying to read individual issues in whatever manner one reads individual issues, there is a level of jumping around. And when you're reading the trades and you think you're getting a straight, you know, trade number, well, the first trade actually is a straight issues 1-7.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, it's, you're not getting issues 8-14. But you do when you get to the end of reading the trades, and there's larger, you know, omnibus editions as well. You do get the full story.
Yes. And it is very much worthwhile. This is one of the more intriguing stories that's been around. I mean, this is really good.
Yeah. I mean, I love the comic when it came out. I hadn't read it in a while. I was kind of excited to dig back into it. There are numerous things that will make folks very uncomfortable, less so in this collection, but some of the questions that folks may have about certain things do definitely get addressed.
Yes, and it's not for the squeamish or faint of heart, because this deals with very hard-hitting and disturbing issues in a very straightforward manner. So be prepared to be disturbed. But I think it's a good disturbed. Makes you think.
But disturbingly entertained.
Exactly. Yes, you will be entertained.
Or entertained disturbingly.
I think it's good to disturb yourself once in a while. But so, do we have anything else to say?
I think not. I think this is good comics. It's good comics, and it's challenging comics.
Perfect word, challenging.
Yeah.
It's definitely, you know, like you said, entertains you, but it definitely challenges you. So,
yeah. But I feel like it's rewarding as well. Particularly one of the things maybe I glossed over that I should have hit harder on. We don't have to really revisit it, but I really want to push the sort of noirish aspect of this. It's mm-hmm. That is a very strong element of this. You know, these are there are murder mysteries, and there are. These are detectives, and they're actually solving crimes. And there's a whole bunch of that comes up along with these other broader strokes. So if you like Blade Runner, or if you like the Maltese Falcon or things like that, I mean, this is really up one's alley as well.
Absolutely. Yes. It's pachyderm like Blade Runner. It's good stuff. And, you know, and I say, and again, it's challenging in a way that it's not just gratuitous. When bad things happen, it's for a reason, or at least for a reason for the story to advance. Good stuff. Thanks for recommending this. It's always been on my list of stuff I want to get to. Thank goodness for this program, because it's really helping me with my reading list.
Same here. And I believe, speaking of helping one with their reading list, you will be helping me with my reading list with your next recommendation, which I think I have not read.
Next time, I will be recommending Black Widow by Wade and Samney, the complete collection. This is obviously a Black Widow story. It collects issues 1-12 of the 2016 run, Black Widow, by Mark Wade and Chris Samney. I was telling Brian this off air. There are a lot of really, really good Black Widow stories. So I was trying to pick one. And, you know, I chose this one because I think it has a more modern sensibility. In that it's not 90s edgy and it's not 60s drudgery, but I think it really it shows the character's potential and is very action oriented, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
All right, groovy.
Okay, well, thanks everybody for listening. Please, we want to hear your comments and your thoughts on this episode and all our episodes. So go to collectededitionpodcast.com and leave comments on individual episodes. What am I going to say? Oh, yeah. And also go to Twitter, where you can talk to me, sometimes Brian. All right. Never Brian.
What is Twitter?
It's Collected ED Pod. That's Collected ED POD. So talk to us on Twitter, man.
Do we have a Snapgram account?
We do. We have Instagram in theory.
InstaChat?
Yeah. I should get back to actually updating that on a regular basis, which I haven't done. I apologize. I forget to do things from time to time. And by time to time, I mean all the time. Okay. Well, thank you everybody for listening. And please, what was I going to say? Try that again. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. And until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at collectededpod, that's collected, E-D-P-O-D. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained? Are you not?